This is Luther Keith, Executive Director of Arise Detroit, a nonprofit coalition of more than 400 churches, block clubs, and community groups promoting volunteerism, community activism, and positive media images to create a better Detroit. Welcome to the Arise Detroit Neighborhood Transformers podcast series, utilizing the practice of Detroit people and organizations developing neighborhood solutions to neighborhood problems. We're going to focus on the importance of block clubs, what they mean to a community, why Detroit has so many of them, and what they can do. And the city of Detroit describes a block club as a voluntary participation and creative citizen leadership, which is the key to developing strong communities. These efforts can be best channeled through block clubs. Everyone who participates in a block club becomes a better neighbor, creates a better citizen, and contributes to a more robust democracy where people are civically engaged. A typical block club is a group whose members come from the same street, neighborhood, or surrounding area. Because everyone lives in a shared space, there's a common community interest in improving the community. A block club's goals and purpose often center on solving problems in the community and meeting residents' needs. A group of individuals can more effectively advocate for their neighborhood and leverage city resources. The key to organizing a block club is recruiting a core group of members who will develop and carry out the group goals. Block clubs require working together as a team and where everyone feels empowered to participate. Today, we have two longtime Detroiters who've been very deeply involved in improving their communities. We have G. Peggy Noble, president of the College Park Community Association on the city's west side, and we have Mr. George Preston, who is president of the Mohegan Regents Residents Association on the east side. Peggy, and I'll throw this to you. Tell us a little bit about College Park Community Association, why it was formed, what you're able to do, and what kind of impact you've been able to have in the neighborhoods that you cover.
Thank you, Mr. Keith. College Park was originated in 1972. And the lady that started College Park, she passed away in 1999. The group tried to carry it on, and it was eventually dissolved by the state of Michigan. Then the group started up again. That one was dissolved. So I realized in the community in which I live now, we didn't have no community association, no block clubs. So in 2013, I decided that I was going to organize block clubs within my boundaries, Greenfield, Southfield, West 6 Mile, West 7 Mile. And once I organized the block clubs, then that's when I decided to reorganize College Park into a community association.
George Preston, who is the president of the Mohegan Regents Association on the east side, talks a little bit about your history and how Mohegan Regents came about.
The Mohegan Regent Association go all the way back to around 1945, and I think it started out more as a political organization. Over the course of time, it sort of dissolved itself, and then we had other groups that come together as the organization. But my involvement has go back about 20 years now. That's how much I know about what we're trying to do. We are just a group of neighbors that come together. They're working together to solve problems in the community. And we've got a great rapport from the community, and we're working well together in terms of sitting down monthly to discuss the issues and concerns of our community. Then we do what we can to work with the people in our community to resolve the problems. Now, there are approximately 60 blocks in our community. We are that umbrella organization for 60 blocks and about 1,200 homes. We've touched base with pretty much all of them. Some of them are organized, and they are organized in varying degrees. But again, we just set that forum for them once a month to talk about their concerns and the issues, and then we work together to resolve them.
Peggy, talk a little bit about College Park. Give us a little bit of more of an overview of your participants and what kind of issues do you address out there on the west side of Detroit for your membership?
We have quite a few senior citizens in our area. We also have a senior citizen building within College Park. We had youth in our area that didn't have anything to do. So I figured, let's start this community association. Let's start addressing some of the concerns and issues that the folks in the community was having. One of them was crimes. One of them was transportation. A lot of the older individuals. And these are some of the things that we try to look out for the seniors. The youth, they were walking around. They didn't have anything to do. We had started our youth Advisory Council, but some of the kids have eventually moved out of the neighborhood. So what we're trying to do is reorganize that, because it's very, very important that we get the youth involved in this community association. They have to look at us, and eventually they'll have to carry that baton on. So it's important to make sure the youth is involved within our community.
Sheridan, what specifically types of things that relates to quality of life issues, like snow removal or public safety? You mentioned that. Are there particular target issues or subjects that you attack as a College Park Community Association?
We did have a radio citizen patrol at one time, but the gentleman that was over that organization, he moved out of the community. And this is something that we're looking at to reorganize and get it back up. The crime right now within College Park, it's not as bad as it used to be. Now, one of the things that I feel that help us out is we have neighborhood signs, and they're different from the old neighborhood signs. They're red, white, and blue, and they have a reflector on it. We have them on most all corners, and it let everybody know that we report all suspicious activity. I did mention this at a meeting other night, and I don't know whether that's helping us in the community. We do have some members that will drive around during the day, afternoon, and the evening, and we look and see what's going on. I'm very much involved with my police precinct, which is the 8th precinct, although I'm not a member of the radio patrol. But if I see something suspicious, I can always call my neighborhood police officer, and they usually come out and help us if it's something suspicious going on that we know shouldn't be going on in the community.
George, talk about some of the issues that you've been addressing and quality of life problems that you address out there on the east side with Mohegan Region, and how are you tackling those?
Just going back again, I mentioned when the group first started years ago, it was political. Now, we're not political at all. As a matter of fact, we're 501c3, and we're just working to resolve community problems. Now, some of the things that we run into, we listen to the community. The blight is a problem, and that fear of crime, these are all things that we're concerned with. So some of the things that we've done is organized teams to work together to eliminate or work together to impact the blight in the neighborhood. We also have a community patrol that where, as Ms. Noble mentioned, we'll ride the community just to look around to see what are some of the problems, some of the issues, some of the eyesores even in the community. And we'll sit down and try to devise a way to impact those things as a problem. Now, we also have a great rapport with our neighborhood police officer. We notify them, and they're good in terms of coming out. We also have established a great rapport with our legislators, too, who will come to our meetings, too, just to hear what some of the concerns are. And if there are specific concerns that someone have, then we'll do what we can to get that agency at our next meeting so that they can explain what and why nothing is being done in regards to the complaint they're having. So these are some of the things that we do. We're just working together to impact blight and also working together to impact crime in our community.
If I ask each of you, and I'll start with you, Peggy, if I'm forming a block club, what are the three things that I absolutely must do to make it happen?
Well, the first thing that I have been doing in forming block clubs, I try to get a group together, maybe about 4, 5, or 6. It only take that few in order to get your block club started. Then I ask them, what are some of their concerns? If they tell me, then we go from there. The next thing that we do, when I bring this group together, I ask them to develop a flyer and go out into the community and talk with the neighbors, let them know that you're trying to organize a block club and get their take on it, see how they feel about it. On the flyer, it should be the time, the date of the next meeting, and the location. Once that's done and you bring everybody in, then you sit down and you ask each one, what are your concerns in your community? What is it that you want to see happen here in the community?
Meets with setting goals and objectives, like for any organization that's going to do something. And Georgia, share how you view that one.
First of all, we try to identify the types of blocks that we have in our community. And I found different types of blocks, some where there's no organization. They're familiar strangers. Everybody's cordial to one another, but there's no real organization. They greet one another, but they don't get involved. We have those where there's a degree of involvement. Someone might try to organize it, can't get it going, so they kind of back away. So we have to encourage that person to stick it out. We have blocks where people will look out, but they don't get involved. It's easy for them to call a neighbor or a relative across town and tell them about a problem they saw across the street rather than call the police. We want them to understand. You have to get involved in that community. You also have neighborhoods where they're cliquish, where you have the older groups that are there that communicate with one another. Newcomers come in and they don't really get them involved, don't make them feel comfortable in the beginning. So you have to get everybody involved and then reach out to that larger organization. Now, the first thing I try to do is to get everybody to do in terms of starting a block club, look at the neighborhoods and try and get input from as many people as you can, trying to identify the problems that each person see. Then you put together a couple of lists. Now, I say two lists because one is long-term, one is short-term. If I tell someone that vacant house down there, we're going to get rid of it in the community, and a month from now they see it still sitting there, they don't feel that we're doing anything. So that's why you have to have small things like a cleanup. We're going to clean up this particular house this week, but the big problem is we're still working toward that, so they can see what you're doing. So that's what you have to do, have long-term, short-term strategies in terms of dealing with problems so they can see what you're doing, and hopefully that's going to encourage people to get involved. And people identify with success and they'll jump on a bandwagon when they see people are going and doing things. So that's what we're trying to do. That's the way we try to get them involved. Show them what we're doing.
Right. Now, involvement, it seems, at the heart of this, obviously, when talking about block clubs and community associations, but that may be harder to do than it sounds. Some people are very reluctant. Some people are very suspicious, don't want to get involved. So what's the key to cracking ice with people? Do you have some kind of a dinner, or what do you do to get some folks together and get past their trepidation, if you will, to say, hey, this is something I want to be part of?
One of the things that we do here over in College Park, on the streets, like Mr. George was just saying, a lot of folks are reluctant to get involved because they look at the past. Because years and years ago, folks used to meet at different ones' homes. So what we do in College Park, we let them know you can meet at the library, either you can meet in a park. But the streets that do not have an interest in forming a block club, we ask for block captains. And some of the members will take two blocks on a street, and we ask them to go out and introduce themselves to the neighborhood. Let them know what you're there for and find out what their concerns are. And you write it down, and then they bring it back to the community association. Because most of the block clubs in our area, most of the members, they come to the community meetings more so than attending their block club. But we do have a committee that work on certain concerns and issues and problems that's happening within their neighborhood. And one of the things I wanted to mention, something Mr. George had mentioned, we do have a few blight problems within our community. We do have a beautification committee that works on that.
Outreach is so important. We just try to find ways to reach out to those that aren't there, that aren't coming to the meetings. Some of the things that we will do, now we're always working all year long with cleanups and things to impact problems, but once a year we'll have a community picnic at the park. So that, and this is the whole thing, is to bring them together, to let them know these are some of the things that we're trying to do. But at that particular time, we're just having a good time. We also have at the end of the year what we call Jazz in the Park. That's bringing all the adults together at all of these events. It's a good time, but at the same time, we make time to make sure we make those announcements to make them aware of what our true goals are for the community.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Piggyback on what you're just saying, when College Park first started out, we had a meet and greet in the park. We have three parks within College Park. So last year, 2021, during neighborhood days, we had a meeting at a different park to bring other individuals in, like Otter Drive and West McNichols. We had some members, but not enough. And we did have a big turnout. The first meet and greet, we learned a lesson because we served food. And we realized that when you start serving food, a lot of times they'll come out and eat and they don't have any other interest. Mm-hmm. So this time, last year, we had raffle. We asked some of the politicians to donate gift cards. And we only had like chips and water. We wouldn't go into the food. So we had a big turnout. We did recruit at least 8 new members. And we had information tables. We had different ones sitting at the information tables to explain some of the problems that was going on in College Park and to find out what their interest was for their community and any problems that they needed us to address. And like you said, Mr. George, sometime we would invite different politicians or get resources to come to the meetings and explain to them what we can do.
So it sounds like you're both indicating that you can do more with the power of the group as opposed to the power of the one. Talk about some of the legal stuff you get, creating bylaws, elections. You've talked about meetings. How important are those to really setting up an organization that's going to be able to sustain itself?
Well, first thing, when I go out and organize a Black club, I mention to them the former leadership team. And that leadership team is the one that's going to go out and pass out the flyers and let them know what you're doing. Once you hold your meeting, you sit down and you want to talk about the boundaries. If you live on, say, Ackerson Street, are we going to form it from, say, from 6 Mile to 7 Mile, or just do 2 or 3 streets? The next thing, after you meet with your leadership team, and I mentioned before, you go out door to door and talk to the individuals and let them know what you're trying to do. Once you do that and you hold a meeting, your first meeting should be pick a temporary president. Once the president is picked, then you set the boundaries and you set your goals and your concerns. After that, then what you want to do, you want to pick your bylaws committee, a membership outreach, and an event planning. Event planning is before, do like a meet and greet to bring everybody in. Members outreach is for other folks to go out there into the community and speak about what you're trying to do. But the bylaws is very important because you cannot move further not until you develop your bylaws. This
right.
is what I tell everybody.
George, your thoughts on that?
You know, what some of the things that we'll do, again, we have a number of blocks in our community, some that are organized as us and some that are not. Now, those that are not, we'll send flyers out to them to make them aware of our monthly meeting. We want to get someone to come to that monthly meeting. We want them all to come, but if one person come, we want that person to be the liaison. That person might say, I don't want to be that involved. I don't want to be the block club president. We're not asking that person to be the block club president. They're just a liaison. If the next meeting, that person can get the flyers out so that we can communicate with each of those blocks. But once we meet with that block, then we can find that person within that block now that it will take that leadership role, and then we'll work with that person to bring them in the fold. Because we want to hear what each individual block is doing. We want them to know what we're doing. Because if, for example, block number one that's not involved, and there's a peaking time in that block, and they don't report it. Night number two, there's that same person peeking in another house, and they don't report it. That third night, now this organized block, they start talking about it, but all we're aware of is an isolated incident. We don't know that there's a pattern there. So that's why it's so important that they come to the larger body to find out what's going on and to make us aware of what's going on in their individual blocks, and we can make them aware of what we're trying to do. So again, it's a give and take so that we're all working together toward that end goal. Now, Ms. Noble mentioned too about organizing the block itself. Again, once you organize that block, again, they're going to take their time and move at their pace, but we do encourage them to establish bylaws that eliminates confusion and then start working together to impact problems. But they first have to identify the problems and start working together to deal with those. That's what's going to keep them there when they know something is being done.
How do you sustain yourself? I don't imagine most folks pay themselves salaries or getting grants or just kind of having basic operating money. How do you handle funding issues with a block? Because I imagine there are different ways of doing that. Talk about that, if you would, please.
Okay. With Mohegan Region, we do have dues. We charge monthly dues. That's $20 per year. And that $20 go toward operational costs. Now, no one is on salary in our organization. So, again, everything that we do, naturally, you need funding, and then we do reach out for grants. And then with those grants, we're able to do the big projects that we want to do. And one example, we wanted to adopt one of the community parks in our neighborhood, and it's up to us to maintain it. We reached out and ultimately got that grant to clean up that park, and that park looks as good as any you'll see in the country. But it's up to the community to maintain that now that we've got it. But again, it's tough reaching out, but we do reach out to get grants. But to start, it's just that small amount because we don't really have any money other than the fact that the dues that we collect and donations that we get. And again, there's no one making any money from this whole thing. It's all just to pay for operations.
Everyone benefits because the community is better off.
Right.
Right. Right.
Peggy, your thoughts on what you're doing over there in College Park?
Our dues are $12 per year, and it's mostly for administrative costs. We are a nonprofit with the state of Michigan, but we have not applied for our 501c3. But whenever there's a grant or something out there, we do have a couple folks that have a 501c3, and they stand in as our fiduciary. But other than that, with all the events that College Park has been holding, most of the politicians, they know what we're doing over in College Park. And this is where we get our donations from. So we don't have to really go into the treasure to take out money. And they have been very supportive of College Park by donating monies. Eventually, we will probably apply for a 501c3.
How important is it to have a relationship with the city officials? I know we have a Department of Neighborhoods. You have council people. How important is it to have relationships with those elected officials in such a way that they are paying you attention and addressing needs that you cannot address yourself?
And that's what's important, to try and get them to come to the meetings, because they can hear what some of those concerns are as people are complaining about things, and they'll take it upon themselves to help to resolve some of these problems. But at least the people know that they're being heard now if they see the legislators at the various meetings. And the same thing with police. You hear a lot of complaints about things that's going on in the police, but the feeling is us versus them kind of thing. But if the police are right there and they're talking to you, working with you, then you develop a rapport with one another to the degree that you can start seeing things getting done, and that bitterness that was there is not there. And the same thing with the legislators. Again, they're there to hear and to work with us. So it's great having them being a part of our organization.
At our meetings, our district manager is very, very much involved. She's always at the meetings. And if she can't make it, her deputy manager will come out, and they listen to our concerns. Because one of the concerns that we had, we seen different areas in the city that was being revitalized. And our concern was, when are you going to come over here to College Park? And I kept talking about that for the last 2 or 3 years. So now the city and planning department is looking to come over and start working with the members and the citizens within College Park. Also, at all of our meetings, most politicians, they know when we are holding our meetings. And they'll call me and say, are you having a meeting this week? So it's very important. Everybody knows your date and time of your meetings. Our neighborhood police officers, they're very much involved, especially whenever we host an event. They always give us police present.
Both of you have groups that have been around a while. What's the key to maintaining longevity, staying power with the Block Club or Community Association?
You've got to be persistent in terms of what you're trying to achieve with the organization, but you've got to be patient because you're dealing with a lot of different personalities and you have to learn how to work with all of those personalities and get what you can out of each individual in terms of whatever their expertise is. You try to make friends with everybody. You try to have fun. You try to build trust with everybody. You have to be sensitive to a lot of issues, too. Now, when it comes to older people, younger people, you've got to be sensitive to whatever their issues are and try to work with each group and always trying to bring in new people. The thing is, you have to start by setting the example. I look at my block. The first thing I have to do is if I'm going to ask someone to do something, I have to do it first. I have to maintain my property if I'm asking my block members to maintain their property and so forth. So these are all things you have to set the example and try to work with everybody, listen to what everybody is saying, and then try to work with them.
And that's very important. Number one is listening and communicating. Like I tell some of my members, when you have young folks in the community, and if they're doing something that's unacceptable, don't go maybe starting a conflict with you and the younger folks. You have to go down to their level. I had on my block, we had a young lady that was on Section 8, and my community is still pretty decent and quiet. When I formed the Fenmore Street Block Club, we developed a welcome letter, and I took it over to the young lady's house. I had to find something that we had in common. Because a lot of us older folks, we feel, well, you don't have anything in common with someone young, but you do. And I formed a rapport with her, and I gave her the welcome letter, and I let her know that when we cook outside on holidays, everybody likes to play their music. I told her I like to play my music, but I play it for myself, not for the whole community. This young lady, something happened, and they did not renew her lease on her Section 8. And the landlord, I knew him, and he said she came and told, was crying that he would not renew her lease because she said that was the best neighborhood that she had ever lived in. So, you know, we have to approach the younger folks a little different than we do even some of our older individuals. We have to come down to their levels because they may start talking, throwing out negative stuff. And I've experienced that, and I'm quite sure Mr. Preston has experienced that also. But you just have to be, we don't receive any money. I do all of this voluntarily. And you have to be, you have to have a passion for whatever you do in your community. And that passion, your members will see that passion that you have, and then they are more apt to gravitate to you and listen to what's going on and be more active in the community.
Yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly. You know, it's not money that you're looking for. When we start on a project and you see it come to fruition and you see some of the things that that's going on in the community that's positive, that's your reward. Again, just like I mentioned, the park that we adopted somewhat, to see what it looked like before we got involved with that park and to look at it now, that was my reward, just seeing the community working together to maintain it. That's what makes you feel good about some of the things that you do.
Yes.
This might be too simplistic, but what is the number one or two mistakes you must avoid if you're trying to form a block club and get people together? What are the no-nos that you just don't want to do?
You don't want to make promises that you can't keep. You want to sit down and listen to what people have to say. And you also listen to them and try and put together a strategy that you can achieve the goals that you have promised that you're going to do. You've got to be there so that you can help them through that. And also, you have to be sensitive to what their needs are. Ethnic, whether it's elderly to whether it's young, you have to sit down and listen to people and then keep promises that you make and follow through. If you say you're going to do something, you schedule something, cancel it, then naturally you lost that person. So you have to look at it first and see if what you can do in terms of achieving it, then work with them to work toward the goal.
I always let everybody know we all have a skill. We all have a gift. And I try to have folks to write out what are some of the things that you find that's interest to you. We even have it on our membership application. If they say, well, I have an interest in, you know, doing a flower garden or something, then we look at that. Each of the board members is responsible for a committee because they are open meetings, and we do allow some of them to come to the community meetings and express what they would like to do and what they have done, if they have done something. But one of the things, our motto in College Park is, and this is what I always tell everybody, I just organized two block clubs beginning of this month. My motto is, a community is nothing without its neighbors. A community is nothing without its neighbors. And we implemented that last year during Arise Detroit Neighborhood Days.
Absolutely, and we have you on video saying that too. Final thing, wrapping up, what difference in the community each of your associations have made the lives of the residents, and why is it important to find more people to do what you are doing in terms of improving and maintaining the neighborhoods in Detroit?
We always start small. We think big, but we have to start small and build to where you want to go. Let people know exactly what you're trying to do and then always working toward to achieve those goals. Now, we mentioned just some of the things that I've mentioned before about the cleanup. Now, we clean up all the time. We schedule with individual blocks, but we have to identify with cleanup organizations that the city that's big, that the people can recognize, such as the Motor City Makeover, Arise Detroit. These are two that we know that everyone is already aware of. So we make sure we notify everybody about that. These two dates are going to be our cleanup dates. So those that aren't working all year long, we know that we can get them involved. And we schedule events for those two events. And I also try to encourage everybody, too. We're always trying to get people involved. Don't ever stop being that good citizen or that good person that you are because you feel that someone else isn't doing what they're supposed to do. You've got to be persistent, but it's going to call for a lot of patience in terms of trying to reach your goals.
We have had a lot of members in the past that had started out with us, and then they dropped out. But then they turned around and came back once they seen what we were doing. Like I said, Motor City Makeover is very important. Arise Detroit Neighborhood Days, we've been doing this for a number of years. Another thing that we do things for our senior citizens. Like I stated before, we have a senior citizen building. In October, we have what we call a Harvest Fest. And we invite the seniors because we have a senior corner for them at the Harvest Fest. They do bring the seniors over in a bus, and we have a corner just for senior citizens where they play cards, they play checkers, we give them gifts, and they are excited about that. Then we give a food basket, and we give out food baskets in October. It's called Oktoberfest, and that's another way of bringing the community together. Like you mentioned earlier, we both mentioned, when they see what you're doing, then they're more apt to come out and join up with you. But a lot of folks, like Mr. Preston was saying earlier, they don't want to be the president. This is when we try to encourage them to have block captains, because you and I as leaders, we have to know what's going on in our community, because we cannot go out there and talk to everybody in the community. And this is why it's important to have block captains so they can bring their issues and concerns from their block back to us so we'll know how to act on it.
Right. It sounds like both of you are saying it's more than just holding meetings. You've got to think deeper and broader than that. It's not just going to a meeting. It's curating a number of events that brings people together. One of our board members for Rise Detroit, Tony McElwain, who ran the Ravendale community for many years, she has an expression that she's using. I've stolen it from her. She says it's okay. I said, if you're going to steal, steal the good stuff. So she has an expression that says that most people are waiting to be led. And when you form a block club or community association, you know, you're going to pull people in who maybe they want to do something, or maybe they don't think they're the type of people to organize. They don't think anybody will care. I certainly want to applaud both of you and all the hundreds of other Detroiters out there who are working with community associations and block clubs and leading and bringing other people in. And we would just encourage others to do so. And we want to thank WWJ Radio again, Rob Davidick and Zach Clark for helping us put this together. This is the very first Neighborhood Transformers program. There will be more, so stay tuned. It'll be posted. Tune in, share it with your friends. And we'll see you next time. And remember what Arise Detroit, our motto is, Arise Detroit, be part of the change. Thank you.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.